Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world. Featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Tuesday, February 12th at 4:20 p.m., and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Get involved with the cannabis civil rights movement and join us here at Normal. You can learn everything you need to know at normal.org. That's norml.org. Welcome to day two of my hosting of the Normal Daily Audio Stash. Glad to have everyone here from the cannabis community. No matter where you're listening, north, south, east, west, or central, we're glad to have you here because you're the people that make it happen. Get in touch with your Normal Daily Audio Stash by checking out our blog at stash.normal.org. You'll catch all the news headlines, information on the music that we're playing here on the Stash, as well as my own personal commentary that just doesn't quite make it or fit in with the audio stash. Also, you can leave your own comments and participate in the conversation. The website, once again, is stash.normal.org. Or, if you'd like to send us an email, email us at stash@normal.org. Now, Tuesday is Government at Work Day here on the podcast, and coming up after the news, we've got audio from the recent hearings at the Oregon State Legislature as medical marijuana advocates, including yours truly, testify against the lobbyists who are trying to prevent patients from holding down certain jobs based on positive urine tests for marijuana metabolites. Yes, I know I did a story on Oregon yesterday, but I've just started the stash and I'm still getting caught up with the other 49 states, so bear with me. We'll be getting to all the other states as the days and weeks go along. Next, we have a sarcastically funny hemp hoedown with music from The Sneakers and their song, The Ballad of Devil Weed. Then it's on to our interview with Dr. Mitch Earlywine as he deconstructs the latest reefer madness headlines and the latest studies that claim marijuana smoking leads to gum disease and is just as addictive as cigarettes. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Brevard County sees rise in marijuana grow houses from WOFL Fox 35 in Orlando, Florida. The Brevard County Sheriff's Office tells Fox 35 that in recent months, they've seen a dramatic increase in the number of marijuana grow houses in middle-class neighborhoods. In 2007, 25 such houses were raided in the county. Five have been busted in this year alone. Brevard County Lieutenant Michael Wong says grow houses are popping up where he least expects them. It's a trend through the entire state of Florida, Wong said, emphasizing that the operations are not only illegal, but potentially dangerous. Most of them are airtight and not properly ventilated, so there are some hazards with the mixture of chemicals, he added. From the chemicals used to grow the plants to the way the growers rig and wire their labs, bypassing the electric meters, it all adds to the danger. Of course, I'd like to point out that the danger wouldn't exist if there wasn't such a profit in growing marijuana, a profit born from marijuana prohibition. Of course, people trying to grow and sell marijuana are going to try to grow and sell it in a place that's the safest and least conspicuous to grow the marijuana. Rather than growing outdoors or in a more suspicious neighborhood, people are increasingly choosing to grow their marijuana in these middle-class homes where they can reap thousands and thousands of dollars of profit. Here in the state of Oregon, where we have licensed medical marijuana growers, these growers don't need to bypass the electrical meters because there's nothing illegal or suspicious about having a high electrical bill from growing marijuana legally indoors. Once again, it's the prohibition of marijuana that causes the problem, not the marijuana itself. Cannabis activist, the Weed King, invokes Constitution, by Craig Pearson from the Windsor Star, Windsor, Ontario, Canada. A lawyer for a marijuana legalization advocate known as the Weed King is one step closer to what may become a legal first in Canada, requiring police to provide proof that informants they use to obtain search warrants are reliable. Defense lawyer Frank Miller launched a constitutional challenge Monday against the search warrant police used to raid the home of his clients, Fred Pritchard, 40, and his wife, Renee Pritchard, 44, in order to seize marijuana plants and drug paraphernalia. Miller is challenging the claims made by police to get a search warrant. He said the search warrant for the Pritchards' home was based on information provided by two informants who alleged that the accused had 50 to 80 3-foot-high marijuana plants in their basement. He noted that the warrant was strikingly similar to one issued against another client of his, though police in that case ended up finding 180 3-foot-high plants and 261 1-inch-high seedlings. "It could be anybody in the city of Windsor making up this sort of song and dance," Miller said in court. "Our position is that nobody was down there." Now, this is an interesting point taken by the defense there about informants. The United States justice system is also riddled with the use of informants in drug cases. Many times these informants make deals in order to plea bargain a case of their own, and their reliability is often in doubt in many court cases. Teacher charged after 13 marijuana plants found in closet, Columbia, South Carolina. A Greenville County high school teacher has been arrested on drug charges after authorities found more than a dozen marijuana plants at her home. 23-year-old Taisha Nicole Barber was arrested Sunday and charged with one count of manufacturing marijuana. Sheriff's deputies went to Barber's home Sunday morning after she called to report that she had been assaulted by her husband. A sheriff's report says deputies noticed a strong smell of marijuana and found 13 marijuana plants in a bedroom closet, worth an estimated $19,500. Master Deputy Michael Hildebrand says deputies did not find 25-year-old Paul Michael Barber. Taisha Barber is in her first year teaching Honors English at Southside High School in Greenville. She's been placed on leave. You know, when I read stories like this, it just really breaks my heart. Think about this poor young woman, 23 years old, and she's facing domestic violence, battery, and assault from her 25-year-old husband. What are her choices? Is she to get herself a weapon of some sort, perhaps a gun or a knife, to try to defend herself against the beatings coming from her husband? Or does she do the right thing and call police so they can defuse the situation and deal with the 25-year-old husband through an arrest or perhaps a criminal prosecution? Well, she made that choice. She did the right thing. And her reward is to be arrested for growing 13 marijuana plants in her own home, in her own closet, which were probably for personal use. This is ridiculous that someone would have to choose between protecting their self, protecting their life, and not giving up their marijuana plants. And furthermore, this woman is a teacher in high school. Can we really afford to be getting rid of our good high school teachers just because they might have some domestic problems and then we find out that they were growing a little pot? Come on, it's time that we end adult marijuana prohibition. This is just another example of how adult responsible cannabis consumers often have to hide in the shadows and avoid encounters with police that every other citizen wouldn't think twice about.
Hi, I'm Rick Steves, and you're enjoying Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Please take a moment right now to support this organization by donating online.
Tuesday is our look at your government at work here at the Audio Stash. While the inevitable re-legalization of cannabis hemp will have to happen at the federal level, the steps leading to that destination take place at the state and municipal levels. We focus in on the initiatives, bills, and amendments regarding cannabis across all 50 states and what activists like you are doing to enact a positive reform to our cruel and outdated marijuana laws. Body dies, the ego cries, the birds they sing, the creatures learn. It's an honest day's work. Yeah, 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 yeah. If you're working hard to make an impact in your city and state, please email us at stash@normal.org and let's share your local efforts with the worldwide cannabis community. Together, we can affect our government at work.
Pollution rises high into the sky. How can we still deny?
Oregon is one of the 12 states that have re-legalized the medical use of marijuana. After 10 years, the medical marijuana battle has now shifted to the workplace. How do employers, who often have federal contracts requiring a drug-free workplace, accommodate those employees who legally use medical marijuana under state law, off-site and after hours, but will turn up positive for those metabolites on a urine test? The answer, according to Representative Mike Schaffler, a Democrat from Happy Valley, Oregon, is to write discrimination against patients' workplace rights into Oregon statute. Schaffler introduced legislation that would give employers the right to fire or not hire medical marijuana patients in what are deemed safety-sensitive positions. Those determinations would be made by urine testing, which, as we all know, does nothing to prove impairment at the work site. On January 22nd, activists from the Oregon and Willamette Valley chapters of Normal testified in Salem before Chairman Schaffler's Business and Labor Committee. As the session begins, Representative Schaffler lets the audience know he's not too amused by the flyers with his face on them, distributed by Normal members, explaining how he wants to legalize discrimination against sick and disabled Oregonians.
Now, I also want to address the legalizing of discrimination before you go to. So I support medical marijuana. I always have, as well. Obviously, you gave a very clear reason why we should in your opening remarks. The whole statute over there is discriminating. I can't do brain surgery on you. I can't drill on your teeth. I can't wire your house. I can't legally drive a 18-wheeler till I can't do any of those things. They discriminate against me. I can't even build on my property the way I want to. Not that I've been denied that, but there's all kinds of things where we discriminate. The whole statute is a book of discrimination. And both these concepts are discriminating. And that's what we do here.
What Representative Schaffler fails to understand is that the so-called discriminations he mentions, being a surgeon or a dentist, driving a semi-truck or wiring a house, are evaluations of one's skill, safety, and ability based on training, licensing, and testing of ability, not based on whether one chooses to belong to a certain religion, chooses to join a certain political party, or chooses to use a certain medicine. Also, we don't fire anyone from their job if they chose to get drunk 2 weeks ago, only if they are drunk on the job. Yet Representative Schaffler would allow employers to fire patients who use their medicine anywhere from 2 weeks to 30 days ago. The point about inactive marijuana metabolites not being psychoactive is certainly lost on, or just plain ignored, by the proponents of the law. In testimony before the committee, this representative of the Associated General Contractors tells his tale of medical marijuana patients in the workplace.
LC 67 doesn't focus or doesn't engage in the great debate. It focuses instead on the issue of workplace safety involving hazardous jobs. It deals, frankly, with the dilemma that a leading bridge builder out of Eugene described to me last week. He found that one of his heavy equipment operators tested positive for marijuana, and when he dealt or talked to this operator, who was a longtime employee, the operator produced a medical marijuana card.
So the heavy equipment operator tested positive for marijuana. Was he impaired on the job? Once again, these proponents of discrimination equate a positive urine test for non-psychoactive metabolites with being impaired, which simply isn't true. Furthermore, this person was said to be a longtime employee. Certainly, if he had any issues with safety, someone should have noticed him by now. The proponents of this discriminatory legislation just can't come to grips with the idea of the responsible adult who uses marijuana in private and leads a normal, productive life in public. They must believe that anyone who's using marijuana is somehow always unstable, always a danger, even long after the effects of the marijuana wear off. Local Normal member and patient advocate Melody Silverwolf was one of the majority of those in attendance who stood before the committee to oppose the proposed law.
I make a low salary, and I have to work to survive. And before I got this job, I was out of work for several years, and I was struggling, and it was very difficult to support myself. And I know if I found myself in the job market again, that would again be an issue. It's hard enough as an older woman in the workplace to get a job, despite my many job skills. But the last thing I need is a job that allows employers to discriminate against me just because I'm a medical marijuana patient. That doesn't work for me. I'm a law-abiding citizen. The most serious trouble I've ever been in is to have a speeding ticket in the 30 years I've lived in Oregon.
Well, you got me beat.
Well, there you go. And probably some other people, too. When it comes to growing my garden, when I use my medicine, I follow the law in every respect. I am not a lawbreaker, and I don't want to be. And my fellow citizens, when they voted for Measure 67, ironically, the same number as this legislative concept, they said explicitly in the law, it says marijuana should be treated like other medicines. And I think that's been a point of departure a little bit in LC 67 I want to mention in a minute. LC 67 would discriminate against people like me, and we only use medical marijuana away from the workplace. No one is suggesting that people should be allowed to be impaired, that they should be allowed to medicate in the workplace, that they should be allowed to, you know, do any of those things. It's strictly an off-the-workplace kind of concept.
In fact, proponents of the law haven't been able to point to a single case where a medical marijuana patient has caused a workplace safety issue. One activist described this bill as, quote, legislation in search of a problem, end quote. The bill had been written with emergency language that would make it difficult or impossible for the voters to begin a referendum on the matter. I tried to make this point to the committee by sharing with them some of the Oregon Department of Labor's own statistics on workplace safety.
If such an emergency truly exists, you would think the proponents of the language can point to a massive increase in workplace accidents. In May of 2000, there were 600 registered medical marijuana patients. By September of 2005, there were over 11,000. Yet, in 2000, there were 55 workplace fatalities reported to Oregon OSHA. In 2005, the number had dropped to 47. When the program started in 1998, Oregon workers suffered work-related injuries and illnesses at a rate of 6.9 per 100 full-time employees. By 2006, the rate had dropped to 5.3 for every 100 full-time employees. Where proponents seem to think medical marijuana patients in the workplace are creating a safety emergency, the data show that Oregon's workplaces have become safer since the passage of the medical marijuana law. Now, nobody would argue those facts are correlated. Medical marijuana hasn't made the workplaces safer, but certainly medical marijuana has not made the workplaces more dangerous either.
My concerns about the nature of the so-called emergency were shared by another Democrat on the committee, Representative Diane Rosenbaum.
I think there are areas of broad agreement among everybody in this room, and I think that includes that we all agree that public safety and worker safety and employers' right to maintain a safe workplace are absolutely important. Had a couple of questions, I guess, for Mr. Hagedorn or Mr. Conkling. You were testifying at that hearing that what was driving the need, the emergency for this bill, was the situation of federal contractors, that you believed they were in jeopardy because of an inability, basically, to prohibit somebody from being in these occupations if they were a medical marijuana user. I would just ask you, because what I wrote down you said was, what would happen if a federal contractor were audited? What would happen if there was an audit? And then you said the consequences could be that they would lose the contract and be barred for 5 years. Could you tell me, has any contractor in the state of Oregon been either audited or sanctioned or barred from accepting future contracts or lost a contract? And if so, could you tell me who they are?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, I'm unaware that anyone has lost a contract at this point. That is not to say that one has not. I just am unaware of it.
Representative Rosenbaum also points out that current law allows any employer to remove an employee found to be under the influence of intoxicating drugs.
I was looking at the existing OSHA rules, and these are under the category of, I think we call it, the employer's duty to maintain a safe workplace. It's these rules 437, a whole series of things employers have to do. And so one of them is that it says exactly this. I think it might address Representative Holvey's concern about alcohol, that intoxicating liquor and drugs is the category, and it says the use of intoxicating liquor on the job is strictly prohibited. Anyone whose ability to work safely is impaired by alcohol, drugs, or medication shall not be allowed on the job while in that condition. And those are the existing OSHA rules by which all employers in the state of Oregon are bound. So I guess my question to any of you is, that language, which sounds very clearly to be saying that employers have not just the right, but the obligation to remove anybody who is impaired by alcohol, drugs, or other medication, shall not be allowed on the job in that condition. Why does not that give employers the right and the duty to remove people who are putting themselves or the public or their coworkers or their employer in jeopardy?
After all the testimony, the committee voted to allow the controversial language to go to the floor of the Oregon House. Representative Peter Buckley was able to get compromise language added to the bill that would include other medications, such as codeine and benzodiazepines, to the list of medications for which one could be banned from safety-sensitive positions. However, as luck would have it, the bill was introduced on the floor, and Oregon's largest newspaper put out an editorial against the bill. But not because it discriminated against medical marijuana patients, but alarmingly, because it didn't discriminate enough against medical marijuana patients. They would prefer language that allows any employer to fire any patient from any job for a positive urine test for marijuana metabolites. The Oregonians' opposition, pressure from letters written by and testimony given by normal members and other medical marijuana advocates, and the complexities of state politics helped to kill the bill on the floor of the House. Oregon's 16,000-plus medical marijuana patients can rest easy for another year without fear of employers being given the right to hang the "No Medical Marijuana Patients Need Apply" sign at the employment desk. Public hearings like this one are your chance to get involved with your government at work. Your voice really does matter. Check out your state's legislative website and follow along with Normal's current action alerts. Point your browser to capwiz.com/normal2. That's CAPWIZ, capwiz.com/NORML2. And click on the issues link for the latest bills and hearings at your state legislature. Don't be nervous. This is your government, and it's time for you to get involved. Marijuana isn't going to re-legalize itself.
James Roquefort here from PeopleRadio.com, and you're listening to Normal, the podcast for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Oh, I didn't know they needed reforming. It's illegal, you say? I'll be right back.
Thank you.
Sorry, I had to flush my goldfish down the toilet. What was this about marijuana? Oh, well, now on with the show.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. We got ourselves some great music today for the Normal Daily Audio Stash. The song I'm going to play for you now is a song by a band called The Sneakers, and the song is called The Ballad of Devil Weed. It's kind of a little country number, a little bit of a Okie from Muskogee flavor at the beginning of it, but hold tight with it. Stick with it, because it gets kind of funny there toward the end. This is The Sneakers with The Ballad of Devil Weed.
A fella came to town one day just looking for some weed. He claimed that he had cancer and claimed he had a need to take a toke, a little smoke, a pot from time to time for his appetite and his nausea. Can you believe that line? Now I'm the local sheriff and I believe it's my job to not give in to every whim of the whiny, wimpy mob. 'Cause I've seen what that weed can do. It drives a man insane. And besides, it's good for any man to put up with some pain.
1,000 doctors can't be wrong, except of course in this one case. So all you good folks sing along, let's put them potheads in their place.
They say it helps them ease the pain and keep their breakfast down. But they'll never use the devil weed, not in my little town. There's a substitute available, another reason I ain't moved. It costs a lot, don't work too well, but it's government approved. So don't give in to those whiny folks all bedridden and gaunt. Unless, of course, now I get sick, then give me what I want.
1,000 doctors can't be wrong, except of course in this one case. So all you good folks sing along, let's put them potheads in their place.
They say it helps them ease the pain and keep their breakfast down. But they'll never use the devil weed, not in my little town.
1,000 doctors can't be wrong, except of course in this one case. So all you good folks sing along, let's put them potheads in their place.
Yeah, they say it helps them ease the pain and keep their breakfast down. But they'll never use a devil weed, not in this hair town. All right.
This This Reefer Madness quote was actually uttered by our nation's first drug czar, Harry J. Anslinger, in the early 20th century press reports calling for the prohibition of what was better known to Americans as cannabis hemp. We now return you to your regularly scheduled Daily Audio Stash. Every week, it seems like there's some new, scary headline in the news media trumpeting the latest scientific reports on marijuana. But which of these reports are truly meaningful, and which of these reports are just another case of reefer madness? At the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we help you make sense of the reports and separate the quality from the quackery with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Associate Professor of Psychology at the University at Albany, State University of New York, and author of numerous books, including Pot Politics, Marijuana, and the Costs of Prohibition, and his forthcoming book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana, which you can pre-order today at Amazon.com.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Hey, we'd always like to come to you to get the true story here about the latest headlines that we see in the mass media. And one of them that I saw here was a really frightening headline to me as a regular cannabis consumer. Apparently now it's worse for me to smoke marijuana than to have to deal with the cavity creeps from the Crest commercial. The latest headline I saw was something about marijuana causing your teeth to fall out. What's the story behind that?
It's a shame, Russ, because we're seeing headlines like, marijuana rots your gums. And there is a big study coming out of New Zealand where a whole bunch of people were followed up over the years and asked about their cannabis use and some of their gum disease. But I'm afraid the headlines have made it into more than it really is. So you do see a slight increase in gum disease in folks who use cannabis regularly. But then, although the researchers were really careful about the results and said, you know, this isn't a causal thing at all, the newspaper headlines really freaked out on it and made it sound like marijuana was some kind of toxic thing that was going to make your gums creep back on you in scary ways. A close look at the data suggests that, in fact, you know, it's not that marijuana makes your teeth fall out at all. They didn't take a look at alcohol use or drug use or any other kind of poor dental hygiene. I can't help but think that quite a few folks may, you know, fall asleep in front of Leno with raw cookie dough in their mouths, and that's pretty much what's creating this effect.
So what are the scientific problems with these studies? I mean, it seems like these studies might have something reasonable to say, but then the media, not understanding scientific method, goes ahead and tries to find the most sensationalist headline.
Exactly. And first and foremost, because the study has such a huge sample, over 900 people, it doesn't take a very big effect to be statistically significant. So in the high-using group, you do see it's 60% more likely to show some of these symptoms of gum disease, but that's actually not a very big effect. Usually in a big epidemiological type study like this, you'd want to see at least a doubling, you know, a sort of 200% kind of rate of the problem in the folks in the high-risk group. And then there just aren't the kind of correlates taken out that we need to see. So, yeah, they don't really look at good dental hygiene habits. There's no flossing, there's no brushing, there's no measure of any of these things that you'd think would be more obvious. So, you know, yeah, we all could certainly put a little thing of floss right by the vaporizer, and I think that would probably be a wonderful habit. But again, it doesn't say anything about cannabis so much as just the way people tend to do things after they've smoked cannabis.
That's what I was theorizing here is, you know, it's not necessarily the cannabis, it's the Cheetos you eat afterwards, perhaps.
That is exactly. And in truth, it's just the falling asleep more than anything else. I would hate to have the snack food industry turn its back on a cannabis user.
Oh, I don't see that happening anytime soon. Now, the other thing that I'm interested in here, as far as these studies go, we've got some others here. They're always trying to link the dangers of that we find from tobacco smoking and try to make a correlation to marijuana smoking. What are some of the latest headlines we've seen in that arena?
This one has been driving me crazy for years, Russ. I had a paper out with Dr. Bob Gore from Los Angeles a few years ago in my book Pot Politics, showing that marijuana is probably no more addictive than caffeine, and markedly less addictive than things like tobacco, alcohol, and any of the hard drugs. There's a new study out that only took a dozen people and basically said, okay, you're addicted to cannabis and you're addicted to tobacco, now quit them and let's take a look at your withdrawal symptoms. And the headline was basically, marijuana is as addictive as tobacco. And I know that anybody who's ever used both of these substances would say that's completely preposterous. But because of these small withdrawal scale ratings with only a dozen participants, they basically said these were not significantly different from each other, so they must be equally addictive. Well, anytime you have a sample this small, like only 12, it's really hard to show that two things are significantly different from each other. So, of course, they didn't look any different from each other. And then the scientists were actually very careful about this in the discussion section on this paper, but unfortunately, the news media again saw, ooh, marijuana, it's so addictive, it's the same as tobacco.
Yeah,
well, in fact, a big study of over 700 mental health professionals that Bob Gore and I did suggested that marijuana is actually nowhere near as addictive as nicotine.
Now, as far as that study goes, too, you know, the small sample, of course, is problematic. But also, it sounds like they only looked at people that were addicted to both tobacco and cannabis, you know, so-called addiction here. Did they look at anyone who just is a cannabis smoker?
It's intriguing because, in fact, finding folks who are cannabis smokers who experience withdrawal is actually kind of an uphill battle. And it took literally hundreds of years before a scale was developed and other situations were set up so that people actually reported withdrawal symptoms. And when you look at the withdrawal symptom scales for cannabis, it's usually things like craving for marijuana, irritability, and less hunger. And, I mean, I can hardly say that that's, you know, anything like the withdrawal people mostly think of when you think of something like kicking heroin or even the horrible headache you get from knocking off your caffeine.
Well, you know, I'm no scientist, but when I look at these studies, I always think that most of these scientific studies are going about to confirm something that, you know, we could probably recognize anecdotally. And, I've never seen, you know, large groups of marijuana smokers to have worse teeth than anyone else or, to experience these kind of symptoms. So, that's where I, you know, like they'd always say that the marijuana would cause a problem with reproduction. And my answer to that was always, yeah, that's why the Rastafarians died out.
Exactly. And it's funny how, I mean, sometimes our personal observations are incorrect, and I find those studies that can disprove those sometimes the most interesting. But a great deal of it tends to just confirm what everybody already knows, and so that's another side of the whole empirical question. I'm glad that people are out there doing this kind of research, and I've actually been pleased with these studies and how careful they are with their caveats. But it's unfortunate that the media, in, you know, an attempt to just sell papers or to cover things more simply than they really are, ends up making things sound markedly more horrible for cannabis than things are at all.
Well, let's look at the media side of this issue then. As far as the media reporting these alarmist headlines, do you think it's just as simple as it being something that sells papers or newscasts, or is there a more nefarious agenda at stake here where the media is actively interested in portraying marijuana in a negative light?
It's a little bit suspicious to me because we've basically got particularly papers in the UK right now putting out some of the most outrageous stories about cannabis, particularly when this week we've seen some stories about cannabinoid medicine and about marijuana not doing anything bad, and those aren't getting the headlines. And I have to wonder if, because in Europe right now there's some consideration about changing some of the penalties for possession, that maybe, just maybe, some folks in the newspapers are saying, hey, go out and dig up some dirt on marijuana so we can get everybody all worked up and get some of these laws passed. I don't think it's quite as obvious as the way I'm making it sound, but it's sort of the tacit assumption in a couple of people's minds, and then if they're in charge of the paper, what a surprise, these are the kinds of stories we see.
Well, you know, if everyone here who listens to the Normal Daily Audio Stash would know a little bit about their history and realize that the media had a lot to do with the original prohibition of marijuana through the Hearst newspapers and the scaremongering back in the 20s and 30s. So maybe that's what leads me to believe there may be more at work here.
Oh, well, I'll never forget that newspaper headline in the 30s about Victor Licata hacking up his mom and dad after smoking pot. I mean, it's just outrageous.
Yeah, you would have thought that if all the bad things that the media says about marijuana were true, we'd have seen some sort of massive increase in the numbers of these people suffering from these problems right after the Summer of Love sometime, I would have thought.
In fact, the rates of all of these problems don't seem to mimic the rates of use in any individual country or across the eras. So you don't see, these outrageous increases in gum disease in the 1970s, for example.
Wow. Well, we'll keep coming back to you, Mitch, from week to week here and get the latest debunking of the quackery that we see in the news media. And want to thank you for joining us here on the Normal Daily Audio Stash today.
Always happy to help.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our policy analyst is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org, and you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from former President Richard Nixon, who once said, quote, "Soft-headed psychiatrists who work in places like the National Institute for Mental Health favor marijuana because they're probably all on the stuff themselves," end quote. 37 years later, Nixon's war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs rages on. With your continued support, we will undo the damage Nixon wrought upon our American hemp heritage.